So now we are we have our next speaker, who is Dr. Manuela Martini from University Lyon 2 and IUF, Institut Universitaire de France. We are changing fields because Dr. Martini is an historian, and the title of her presentation is Close Care, Distant Care, Migrations and Transnational Domestic Resources Between the Mediterranean Mountains and Northern Western Europe, Late 19th, Early 20th Century.
Thank you. Thank you very much to the organizers. So we are shifting to another discipline and another type of methodology, because we will talk more of micro history than the previous presentations. This workshop is for me a wonderful opportunity to gain a better understanding of the economic and cultural world in which the actors of the study that I've been carrying out for several years lived and worked. The aim of this paper is to catch the ways of linking the words and practices of the care they received by close relatives, even if most of them are not used to deliver written narratives of their ordinary lives. Since the early 2010, I'm interested in the transnational care chains that are created between the Nure Valley and the Piacenza mountains in northern Italy. Just to show you the place in this center map. In the Piacenza mountains in northern Italy, Apennines, and two privileged destinations of these migrant flows, so the Perth suburbs and the coal mining region of South Wales in the north of Cardiff, mainly the Rhondda Valley. And more specifically, my research focuses on all the intermediate links in the care change. At the end of those are women in the homeland, and women abroad, who are sometimes engaged in domestic service activities for healthier employers, but that sometimes when they were employed in factories or were self-employed, laundresses, for example, or little store managers, were themselves the end of the care chain. So those transnational care chains are thus horizontal and less socially asymmetrical than in current analysis of global care chains. Okay, just to give you a quick idea, because we had no much time, of the literature I used. Of course, early old child is one of the most important authors in this literature. These practices occur within the framework of transnational families, as historical and anthropological literature on Italian migrants, for example, Loretta Baldassare and Donna Gabaccia, has been able to show by studying this, above all, from the migrants in the place of arrival point of view. In my paper, a question that is merely mentioned but not really addressed is that of multilingualism in the country of arrival, involving, of course, the language of the country of arrival, but also the dialect of the sending areas. This issue is probably less crucial to the study of contemporary populations that are all Italian speaking at present, but is more than relevant in the past. The Italian referred to in historiography, in fact, came from regions of Italy which were unified in a single country only a few decades before the migration flows started in 1861. And in reality, this language, the Italian, is not spoken by them. They spoke much more their local dialect than an Italian language invented by an intellectual elite, a language that was poorly mastered by a population with little schooling and education. The subject of this paper stems from direct observation of traces in the biographical narratives of small entrepreneurs that emerged fairly systematically in written and oral accounts of care that was provided with words in their native region dialect. And the link with the economic dimension of these words of care is also essential, as we will see in a moment. The sources I use are memoirs written in French, Italian, and English, interviews in Italian and French, as well as 19th century printed surveys, and a Piacenza dialect dictionary, in particular in two editions written by Lorenzo Foresti. All these sources were collected to other purpose, and this also, I think, an interesting point, to work on ethnicity and its limits, the recruitment and management of small businesses set up by migrants from the Mediterranean mountains. In fact, these sources are rich in traces and all the more significant of links with places of departure stemming from transnational forms of care. And they are also unanimous on relating that people spoke mainly their dialect in the place of departure and of arrival. The verb, okay, this is the crucial point. These are the places. The verb, the people in the place of origin use is bada. Is intended it's to take care of. The verb bada is indeed an important verb because it deals with the fact to take care, to be careful, to look after, to watch. It is in the Italian language translated with badare, badare, attendere, fare attenzione, and in English with the words to watch, to look after, to tend to be careful, to take care for and of. The important thing is that the verb bada is indeed also used to describe the watching and care of animals and cattle. An essential activity in the mountains, along with farming and periodic migration to supplement the resources needed to ensure the survival of families whose fragmented and poor landholdings were for the most part unable to support a growing population in the 19th and 20th century. So after a brief description of family structures in the context of departure and arrival, and the form of transnational care that the sources make it possible to trace, I will go into greater detail in the final section of my paper through an in-depth analysis of a case study of the content of this, dealing with the content, the practices of this care, and the vocabulary used to characterize it. And also trying to catch the lasting relationships that this created between the actors of these practices. So just quickly come back to see the places. The homeland, the places of departure. The starting point of the migration flows I'm talking about are the villages in the Nura Valley located from 600 to 1,000 meters above sea level. And at the end of the 19th century, the family system in these places, this is also an important thing, was characterized by the presence of a significant part of extended families. So you have some picture of the early 20th century of nowadays, Bardi and Ferriere. These are the two most important small cities, towns in this area. The study of parish registers show that, for example, for a parish in Ferriere, at least one-sixth of the population was absent at the end of the 19th century. And the other important thing this parish register show is that the nuclear families is, of course, a majority, but there are also a large number of complex families, more than 40% to the total of 167 households. So interestingly, there were these complex households were equally divided between extended family with at least one parent and multiple families with several nuclei called brotherhood or fraternal. The link between families, family structure and migration is clear because the connection between mobility and family structure is evident for most of these complex families. Many of these families in complex families included migrants with both medium and long distance destination. And clearly there were children and that were cared of by relatives while their mother, married mothers and fathers were abroad. The distinguished feature of this migration, young and old migrants were both involved in the process, was the remarkable use of the families as a resource. This ability to create and maintain forms of family cohesion in the complexity of transnational journeys is an additional, of course, guarantee for these people and migrants of the optimization of resources from migration, of course, but also for the local economy. Indeed, it has been the case in more recent time, of this complex system that creates also transnational, what we call now transnational families. So it was precise at this moment that we can see this type of configuration. In the receiving countries, this is another example, the particular extended family setup in the receiving countries was similar at the beginning. The union of, for example, two nuclei operating in a binational circulatory migration configuration and practicing several forms of sharing of living and professional space was very usual in the east Paris suburbs. In Paris, the non-Levare migrants were involved very quickly in building industry. And from the early 20th century, they began to found their own small enterprises. And for a significant part of them, founded by two brothers or brother-in-law. So they were the similar pattern that in the country of origin, so in the places of origin. And contrary to what was read until a few years ago in scholarly literature on migration, close observation of these migrant families shows that the women in these migratory chains were undeniable, very often very active, especially in the service professions, but with a fairly precise specialization in laundry and in hotel and catering trade. And this is the case not only for unmarried women, but also for the married women. 82% of them declared the profession. In this laborious context, numerous personal accounts and narratives testify of form of family support in the places of arrival and of origin, as well as childbirth and childcare for young children. In order to allow young mothers to go back to work, the third child was often left in the village of origin to the care of the mother's or father's relatives. And these care activities is invariably associated with the work of immigrant women and reveals the ways transnational families originate and work through long distance, activating several kinds of transnational care service. It could thus be interesting to compare these Parisian family patterns with patterns in other contexts, for example, in South Wales, and as I told you, because this also was a major destination and a destination of choice for a growing number of Italian Apennine migrants since the 1870s. Together with London, this area concentrated the most important migratory flows coming from Parma Valley to Great Britain at the end of the 19th century. And as it was the case in the Paris suburbs, even in Wales, the entrepreneurship of Italian migrants started by an early stage of the migration flows. In this case, the Italian migrants specialized in a given professional field, a niche market concerning what they called refreshment houses, temperance bar, that is without sale of alcoholic products. Ice cream making was one of the Italian cafes, coffee's specialties. The fabricating and sending teas was organized on a family basis, and in this case too, women were used to work with their husband. And also in this case, and the Parisian suburbs, the presence of women among Italian migrants was very, very rapidly growing. So they were 19%, etc. And another interesting thing is that these women wished, for different reasons, perhaps trust on some relatives or a desire to give their children education and values shared with their native community. Some of these women began to turn towards their distant families in order to take care of their children. A vertical chain of care guided by a strict economic logic is not necessarily the reason of this choice of transnational care, because a long journey to give birth or to entrust a child to someone else at home is more expensive, of course, than recruiting childcare providers locally. So it is interesting also to study this kind of choice, I think, in order to better understand this transnational and care chains. So the third part of my paper, so this is what the activities, concern precisely these care links beyond caregiving. That means that the many accounts we have of care practices attest to the different forms they took, and the strong links the migrants involved in this practice maintained with their native villages. This included periodical trips back, despite the difficulties of journeys involving several means of transport, and always a final section on foot along mule tracks until the end of the 1970s too. So I'll try to go a little further in analyzing the content of these relationships, which, as I mentioned in the introduction, in my introduction, are called by words that are typical of the agricultural and livestock economy of the Emilian Mountains. So bada means to take care, to look after, and the locution tenia bada means to hold in pasture, dar in pasto, so to give the meal, according always to the Piacentino Italiano vocabulary of Lorenzo Foresti in 1856. So the words that are used in the local livestock economy, the relationship to which this care called bada is full of, is also an emotional, of course, dimension that is not apparent, but then that we can find through other sources, personal sources, memories more particularly. So here I will focus in particular on the links with an important caregiver in these accounts, the grandmother who remained in the village. And the migration historiography does not, of course, in general, dwell very much on caregiver younger caregivers in the place of origin, because they are more interested in migrants in the place of arrival. As Mazzucato and Chance remark in the Journal of Marriage and Families, the role of the caregiver of the child in the country of origin is understudied. So we'll try to have a look to this through, but there are, of course, much more examples, even from an iconographic for a picture point of view of these links, but we can also find it through written sources. During a 1998 interview I received by Louis Taravella in the Parisian suburbs with some registers of the company archives, which are now in the Nogent municipality archives, a handwritten memoir entitled Petite histoire de l'entreprise Cavanaille-Taravella, written in French in August 1997 by the company's retired previous manager, Louis, born in 1920 in Nogent-sur-Marne in the eastern suburbs of Paris. He was 77 at the time, and in its memoirs, it tells the story of the family business of which he was the second generation manager. Founded by his father and uncle in 1921, the small firm was then run by his son Michel, until it was sold in 2008, following Louis' death in 2005. The research is based on several interviews I did with the same Louis and his children. So the Petite Histoire, and of course on this Petite Histoire. The Petite Histoire mainly recollects and tells anecdotes and stories relating to the construction of the countless buildings constructed by the company from the interwar period until the 1980s. But at some point in the midst of this story, Louis recounts a significant episode in the life of his brother, Jean, whose death as a prisoner of war during the Second World War destined him, Louis, for the role of the manager of the family business, because it was the last boy in the family. It was this testimony, an important testimony of the bonds generated by care. And what is almost striking is that it was not prompted by the researcher's question. It is in the text. And the importance of this is, I tried to underline. So my brother Jean was 11 years older than me and married, was eager to see our grandmother Francesca, who lived alone in her mountains of Italy in capitals, and who had looked after him for the duration of the war, around 5 years. This memory haunted him. For him, she was a second mother. And as his wife was unable to make the trip, so it was with me that he made the journey. He couldn't wait to see her again. So you can read the passage. And I think that the important thing is that it was really an absolute necessity. It is clear for the 28-year-old Jean to set off in the middle of the winter with his 7-year-old younger brother in February, when the last part of the journey was made over icy mill tracks in freezing temperature. So it was really evident that it was for him a priority, an absolute priority. It is true that the two Taravella brothers set off in the off-season of the family construction businesses founded by their brother and uncle, but the word used and the length of the journey drawn in great detail by his younger brother 50 years later really, I think, attest to the imperative reasons behind the trip. And the quality and content of the human relationships found in the Apennine Mountains are also described very precisely in this narrative. So there is much more than a simple anecdote. Along with the attention and feelings of care, there is also other interesting things that appear. For example, the knowledge, the fact that knowledge and popular culture were also passed on, and Louis remembers them vividly. The wakes, for example, and the transmission of beliefs shared by the other members of the village are also attested to by Louis, who considers himself more modern, he uses this word, and sees their effects on Jean, who spent a crucial period of his childhood between the age of 5 and 9 with his grandmother. So the 35 people who make up the village and who are listed in the registers of the Rocca di Ferriere parish are described as all gathering together on winter evening in 1937 for evening veille at Francesca's house. And it must be noticed that once the road to Rocca has been built in the 1970s, Louis later had the house restored, even if he never went, I think, very often there. He restored the same house where I met in the early 2010 his first cousin, a winter resident of the Parisian Estran-sur-Bos, but it was in summer, of course, there in the mountains. So all these kind of relations are, of course, another way to track and to catch this kind of relationships that are, of course, for an historian, difficult to find, asking to people that are of course died. So to conclude, now that's the point. So we have some traces, and of course we cannot ask questions, so we have to deal with what you can collect. So in conclusion, so the starting point for this study is to be found in historical ethnology. Its aim was to closely observe the complete trajectories and functioning of transnational families in the two ends drawn by circulatory migratory fields between areas of departure and arrival. And in the place of departure of migrants from Piacenza, Mediterranean, Apennine Mountains, the words of care are the words of the rural economy, as we saw. So Bada means look after cattle and people, but the migrants' accounts and memories attest to the emotional bonds charged with powerful feelings that this transnational care creates, feelings capable of making young Franco-Italian raised near Paris to take the risks of a long journey during the fascist period, you have to say, but this is another story, where people were compelled to go to into the army in Italy at this point of the Italian history, to a country that may have seemed like the Far West to some of them, and Louis tell this very explicitly. To go to the Far West, and the close combination of the two dimensions of care contained in the word bada, so material and emotional, is inherent to the migratory history of the extended families, which is characteristics of the mobility system in the villages of departure. And these extended families, in this case, is a resource that guarantees the mobility of married men and women and structures the community life for decades, right up to the 1960s. And the strength these transnational links can take transcends, of course, the physical distance, as we saw. And it's, okay, in this case, I can mention another little anecdote. It is hardly surprising at this point if we think that Jean's father, Antonio, who has been living in Paris suburbs for 10 years at the beginning of the early 20th century, sold the bicycle he had just bought at a loss at the very beginning of the 20th century, after receiving the letter, his mother, Francesca, to do the same, Francesca sent him in response to his enthusiastic message on the subject, urging him to sell it immediately. The usefulness of a bicycle in the Nure Valley Mountains at the turn of the 19th century, of the 20th century was hard to imagine for Francesca. Antonio obeyed on the spot, much to the delight of his first son, who was able to grow up a few years later during the war in a protected environment, which is dear Nonna, while his father was conscripted into the Italian army and his mother worked to support him in France. That's all for the way. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Manuela. So, are there any questions from the audience, the in-presentia audience and the online audience?
Can you hear me? Yes. What you say there resonates with my own life. So you, as a migrant, you every now and then you think about why you left your homeland. And when you can go back comfortably enough to help people that had made sure that you survived the odds of getting where you are. And time flies by imperceptibly because you keep thinking, maybe next year, no, I'm not ready yet. Maybe 2 years from now. But what happens is that you are getting older, your parents are getting older, your grandparents are getting older, and the clock is really kicking on them. And when you go back, it may be too late. And so that's the emotional element that I see in your paper. And of course, implicitly, I think of the time immediately after the war, when Europe had to rebuild, Western Europe was engaged in rebuilding itself. And the population that helped rebuild places like France and so forth came from outside the country.
Yes, you are perfectly right. I wrote an article on these issues for a book published by Palgrave 1 year ago. And the editor was precising this situation, and she told me that it was during the COVID crisis that her husband, who was in Japan, wasn't able to come back to Italy for 3 years, exactly the same periods, the time period that we are talking about. There are other stories from Wales, precisely given this type of hints about the duration of the they were used to come back every 3, 4, 5 years, and in the case of Jean, probably it was more than this because I think it's really an excellent point, because even if in a world where the communication, transport, etc., are very, of course, much more efficient and performant than in the past, we have this kind of problem. So imagine in the past and what this and the strength of care links given are so strong that even if in the difficult context you are, you know, able to imagine to come back at some point of your experience.
Yes, I was just wondering, because in migration studies we know very well the concept of badante,
because
it's a major issue for current migration to Italy. And I was just wondering if there's any kind of connection established by the people themselves, you know, being, you know, badabadante and all the South Americans taking care of the elderly in Italy, and they are almost like in the family. And, you know, I just echoed this very basic question of
Thank you. It is precisely the reason why I began to ask myself if there was a link between the actors, because it's a neologism, but Dante is a term used in Italy to call people caregivers. Caregivers are badanti. So it's the same contextual task language context, I think. And in this case, the important thing is that there are really both the emotional and material dimension. And in each case, I studied, both of them are really connected in the present. So that's why we use the same word of the past. We could have invented the word. It's interesting, though. We use in Italy the same word as 100 years, 2,300 years ago, because it's the same type of material and emotional tasks and, experience. And that is a good thing for an historian to have this longer, continuity through words.
Is there another question?
Yeah. Thank you. You told that this Piacenza dialect was at the time of departure for them and at the time of arrival also.
Awesome.
So, do you have any information that how long this dialect last after their arrival?
Yes.
Because you said also that family acted as a resource for these migrants, isn't it?
Absolutely. So we can see this picture, I wasn't able to comment on these pictures, example of different generations. It's, of course, even in the places of arrival, there are care relations. I wasn't able to talk of this because it was migration, but for some of these women, we know a little bit about their experiences. And we know that they didn't speak English or French almost never in their lives. They spoke all the time the dialect of origins. The old women, they arrived very late in their life, so they weren't able and didn't want to learn. And there is a short story very interesting about this, because an old woman in, I forgot the name, Tony Pendy, maybe, in South Wales, explained to the younger wife of a relative that it was worthwhile to be turning ridiculous, to be mocked of, because they didn't need this, so they didn't of course accepted my way of speaking, so you too, you don't have to cope with this risk to be laughed on, etc. And the younger, of course, women decided to laugh with the people, and it worked, of course, and she integrated. But because she accepted as the first step of their integration to receive comments by the Welsh minors. So at the time, of course, they were very, sensitive, they were strong people, and crying at all the emotion of the feelings of the people. They were laughing because they were, I think, surprised by the way of these women to speak. But it was not conceived. I think, in a way of ejecting people. It was just a way, because they laughed also of their friends, it was a way to socialize in a way. So when you accept to enter into these dynamics, you can also imagine later to learn a little bit better English. And she was happy to having accepted this experience to Yes, to be in a public house with people that but different from her, and
I think that the notion of
the community in this way, yeah, accepting this strange relations at the beginning.
And your presentation is very important from the historical viewpoint, because I think that the notion of border was not so much important in those periods as it is relevant today. Because if these Italians, they were speaking in a dialect in one side of the mountain, they can speak also on the other side of the mountain. But well, the country has changed over there. So it can continue like that in the 19th and the 20th century, but now it has very much become very much strong, the notion of border also, and the language also.
Yes, I think that they were not, there are studies on the Italianness of the construction abroad of the Italianness of migrants from these regions at the late 19th century. It's really true, because there were, until the First World War, there were no passports needed, so it was really quite easy to cross the borders that were not, you know, really borders, because for example, between Italy, the northern Italy, and France, there were just mountains to pass to go through. So really, and even to go to South Wales, you of course could take a boat, and they, most of them did this with coal, incoming and empty boats going back to Wales. But other people crossed simply France and arrived to the port Le Havre, etc., and just or Calais, and crossed just the Channel. So as they were in Great Britain. So it was interesting also, because there were different ways. So it took, 10 days at least, 15 days to cross this. Now a day, short distance, but at the time it was very long distance. But easy to imagine to for these people, because they were used to mobility.
Thank you.
Is there another question from the audience? I don't see. Just an anecdote. I was born in Haute-Savoie, which was actually the last province to be attached to France. 1860, and it was quite interesting that. And it's still actually very much part of, especially among the old generations, that the worst. My mother recalled that my father took her aside, and she said the worst thing that you can do to the family is to marry an Italian man, you know. And it was quite interesting, because at that time the Savoie voted 41%. Against 49% of being attached to Italy. And so there was this, you know, Italy and Italians represented the threat, you know, of not being French. And historically, there have been a lot of, you know,
makes the marriage, of course.
Yeah, a lot of migrations. And there is a lot of people from that region who actually have Italian origin, are of Italian origins. But you know, that's quite
the
interesting.
Representation. No, it's really true. Thank you. Because of course there are also the images and representation of migrants that are negative, so xenophobia, etc. It's at the late 19th century was very, you know, an important issue with conflicts, violent conflicts between French workers and Italian workers. It is also an important issue, because women, when they married an Italian, lost their French nationalities until the 70s. So this was also the point. But so it was really gendered, of course. The laws were gendered, and as Patrick Vail shows. Very well in his books. So